This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Bad lines. Israeli forces kill at least five Palestinians in pre-dawn raids on several locations in the occupied West Bank. Iraq's influential Shia cleric Muqtada al-Sadr slams as a terrorist Zionist gathering, a conference held in the semi-autonomous Kurdistan region on normalizing ties with Israel. Polls open in Germany's general election that looks too close to call, with a strong challenge to retiring Chancellor Angela Merkel's conservatives. Hello and welcome, everybody. Israeli forces have they have killed at least five Palestinians overnight. In the occupied West Bank, two Palestinians were killed during an Israeli raid on Beit Anan, a neighborhood northwest of Al-Quds. Two more were shot dead in the city of Jenin, while one Palestinian succumbed to his wounds in hospital. Meanwhile, Palestinian groups reacted to the latest Israeli atrocity. The resistance movement Hamas said Palestinians will continue their resistance to stop Israeli crimes. The group also called on the Palestinian Authority to end its security cooperation with Tel Aviv and meetings with Israeli officials. Other Palestinian groups also said they would press ahead with their resistance against Israel. Well, the Kurdistan Regional Government says a conference on normalizing ties with Israel held in Iraq's Erbil was neither authorized nor approved by local officials. The KRG said the issues discussed in the conference do not reflect the views and policies of the Kurdistan region. It also pledged to take measures to discover how the meeting was held. Earlier, prominent Iraqi figures, including the country's president and prime minister, slammed the conference as illegal. Separately, senior cleric and political leader Ammar al-Hakim reacted to the conference, calling the Palestinian cause the most important issue for Arab and Muslim nations. Influential Shia cleric Muqtada al-Sadr also decried the meeting.
Erbil must prevent such terrorist Zionist gatherings. Otherwise, the Iraqi government must treat all the participants of such conferences as criminals and arrest them. If Erbil does not prevent such meetings, we will take actions that we are religiously, intellectually, and nationally responsible for.
The leader of Iraq's Asaib al-Haq movement also said the meeting is against Iraqi law and violates human and national principles. Bais al-Ghazali said the resistance movement will not keep quiet against, quote, such a great betrayal. Other Iraqi groups, including Fatah Alliance, Popular Mobilization Units, and Kataib Hezbollah, also decried the conference. On Friday, 300 people gathered in the city of Erbil to demand the normalization of ties between Iraq and Israel. The event was organized by a U.S. think tank. Political commentator Firas al-Najm says that Iraqi people are opposed to Israel normalizing ties with the regime.
In regards to this issue here, we know very well that the Iraqis, in general, the majority of Iraqis are against the Zionist regime. They're against the occupation. They stand with the Palestinian oppressed people, the people of Gaza that are blockaded, over 73 years of occupation. And in nature, the Iraqis reject any normalization with the Zionist regime. And we've seen lots of protests inside Iraq when these other, Arab regimes, as they call them, whatever they want to be called, they're obviously, we know they're illegitimate, such as the Emirati or the Bahraini and other regimes that went towards normalizing and becoming friendly with the Zionist regime. A lot of the Iraqis went out and protested against it and rejected this, as well as Al-Quds Day, the international day that was established by Imam Khomeini. We see thousands of Iraqis that march in the capital city of Baghdad against Israel and against the human rights violations of Israel, and standing towards supporting and extending a hand to the Palestinian people to help them liberate the land of Palestine.
Muslim pilgrims are marching toward Iraq's holy city of Karbala to mark Arba'in, The pilgrims are arriving in the city to observe the 40th day after the martyrdom anniversary of Imam Hussein, the grandson of Prophet Muhammad. This year, Arbaeen falls on September 28th. Prior to the pandemic, the event drew millions each year, but now the Iraqi government has restricted the number of foreign pilgrims. It has allowed only 40,000 foreign visitors into the country, many of them Iranians. Imam Hussein and dozens of his companions were martyred during the Battle of Karbala with the tyrant of their time over 13 centuries ago. They were killed on the day of Ashura. No, so Iran says it will judge the United States by its actions, not words, and its willingness to return to the 2015 nuclear deal.
We have made it clear that we will judge Americans by their practical behavior, and the conflicting messages relayed to us through the media or diplomatic channels will not contribute to our decision-making.
Amir Abdullahian made the comments as he was wrapping up a five-day trip to New York to attend the UN General Assembly. The top diplomat said Iran's conditions for returning to the talks in Vienna to revive the accord was a hot topic at his meetings. Amir Abdullahian said he discussed the issue in detail with his French, German, and British counterparts, as well as EU foreign policy chief. Iran has already blasted the U.S. for failing to take a serious step to resume compliance with the pact and unilaterally left 3 years ago. Tehran says it wants the U.S. to remove all sanctions in a verifiable way before joining the accord. Author and commentator John Stepling joins us now from Indre, Norway. Mr. Stepling, welcome to the program. Let's go over the recent comments made by the Iranian foreign minister. Mr. Amir Abdullahian said that Iran will be judging the United States by its actions, not by its words, to show whether it's willing to return to the 2015 nuclear deal. One of those steps that have been highlighted is the issue of removing the sanctions. Do you think the United States is serious in wanting to return to the JCPOA? And if so, why is it not removing the sanctions?
When Iran issues a statement, the United States will issue a statement in return a week later or vice versa. And it's always just the reality is you have US, China, North Korea, Pakistan, Israel, France, and the United Kingdom. I think those are the nuclear powers. The US, however, has a deal, what they call NATO nuclear sharing. And it houses nuclear warheads, about 20 each, in Italy, Belgium, the Netherlands, and I forget where else. I think two bases in Italy, actually. And, you know, Pakistan is not signatory to anything. India is not signatory to anything. Israel does not even admit officially that they have them, though everybody knows that they did. And if you go to, I don't know, you know, the Wikipedia even, you will see it says Israel has never openly admitted preferring a policy of intentional ambiguity. Now, imagine if Iran said that. Say, yeah, we have nuclear weapons, but we're not going to admit it because, you know, we want ambiguity. You think that would be okay? You think that would be listed as okay in the New York Times or Wikipedia or wherever? Of course not. The question always comes back to the sanctions. There shouldn't be sanctions. They should be removed. There was never a reason for them. And as far as the JCPOA goes, it becomes a symbolic, concept more than anything else. Iran has already complied with everything asked of them for a number of years. They've bent over backwards to agreeably comply with all the often irrational requests of the Atomic Energy Commission, the U.S., et cetera, et cetera. And yet, the other country in Europe that has U.S. nukes is Turkey, and that's at the Incirlik Air Base, which the U.S. views as hugely important because of its location. So we have an open fascist in India, in Modi. We have a somewhat of a loose cannon in Erdogan in Turkey. Not somewhat of a loose cannon, a loose cannon. We have North Korea that pulled out with good reason from the deal. So in light of all of that, plus the fact that Israel has its rumored somewhere between 90 and 400, that's a pretty big difference, but and never talks about it, has never asked anything, has never signed anything. You know, the JCPOA looms as kind of, as I say, political theater. I mean, the U.S. has bases all over the world. It has nuclear warheads all over the world. It is the only country that aggressively sails their ships into other waters, flies over the airspace of other countries. They are the ones that provoke, you know, responses from countries just minding their own business. And yet, if you read the American press, it's always Iran, Hamas, Hezbollah, these horrible organizations. These are terrorists and war against terror. We can't let Iran have the bomb, et cetera, et cetera. At this point, in 2021, such discussions are just ludicrous, and people should stop participating in them. I mean, Iran has done nothing. They're a sovereign nation. The U.S. has no business dictating anything to them or to anybody else. And yet, you know, the mainstream media, the giant corporate media and telecoms, are on the same page with the Pentagon, and they disseminate the same propaganda over and over and over for years and years and years. And there we are.
All right, thanks a lot, author and commentator John Stepling, joining us from Norway. Germans are heading to the polls in a knife-edge national election to pick a successor to Chancellor Angela Merkel after 16 years in power. More than 60 million people are eligible to cast their ballots to choose members of the lower house of the federal parliament, the Bundestag. The election is too tight to call. The center-left Social Democrats, or the SPD, are posing a tough challenge to Merkel's Christian Democratic Union Party. The retiring chancellor has urged voters to support Armin Laschet to shape the country's future. 60-year-old Laschet is running against Olaf Scholz of SPD. Laschet has warned the SPD-led alliance would destabilize Europe with its plans. Scholz, 63, has said he's fighting for, quote, a major change in Europe. The president of the British Automobile Association says panic buying rather than shortages is causing queues at UK petrol stations. Edmund King said the problem should pass in a matter of days if drivers just stick to filling up when they need to. He said there's plenty of fuel at source and that a shortage of lorry drivers was only a localized problem earlier in the week. On Saturday, panic buying continued throughout Britain's petrol stations. Worker shortages are a growing problem in Britain, which had a record 1 million job vacancies between June and August. Now at a U-turn on its post-Brexit immigration policy, Britain has decided to issue over 10,000 temporary work visas to lorry drivers and poultry workers to ease chronic staff shortages.
Is witnessing long queues outside fuel stations, including the capital, London, following fuel rationing at some distribution centers and temporary closure of many retail stations. British Petroleum said it has closed more than 1,000 of its fuel distribution stations, citing a lack of both unleaded and diesel grades. The multinational gas and oil company blamed the closure on a shortage of truck drivers. The government has cautioned against panic buying, saying there is no shortage at refineries. Britons have, however, paid little heed to the pledge, as long queues of motorists have been forming outside filling stations since Saturday morning. Retailers have warned that the clock is ticking for the government and that it only had just days to prevent a significant disruption in festive preparations in the run-up to Christmas, which is only 3 months away. The administration of Prime Minister Boris Johnson says that it is looking at temporary measures to address the issue. British media said the government is mulling allowing some 5,000 truckers into Britain on short-term work visas in a bid to alleviate the acute labor shortage. The UK's Road Haulage Association, however, says Britain needs 100,000 drivers to meet the demand. The UK opposition leader has blasted the government for what he called letting the people down amid the fuel crisis.
We're obviously at a crucial time for the country, and this government is letting people down so badly, whether it's hammering working people on tax and universal credit, whether it's shortages of food and fuel. I've just been up the road, three petrol stations, one of them with a massive queue and two of them with no fuel.
The driver shortage is partly blamed on Britain's withdrawal from the European Union, which has resulted in tens of thousands of truckers from EU member states leaving the UK. But it has been exacerbated by the coronavirus pandemic. The shortage has also set Britain on path for food chaos, since it has led to disruption in deliveries to supermarkets and fast food chains. The fuel issue comes as Britain is also facing a record high surge in natural gas prices, with wholesale prices being up to 250% since January. Experts say households will get hit by surging power bills this coming winter, while small energy firms are at risk of collapsing. Supermarkets and food firms say the price rise has caused a shortage of carbon dioxide, which is threatening UK supplies of meat and fresh produce.
Russia has called on the United States to stop imposing its development model on other nations.
President Biden has recently announced the rejection of military methods used to, as he put it, remake other countries. We expect the U.S. to take one step further and reject any other methods of imposing their development model on others, not only military ones.
Sergei Lavrov made the remarks during a speech to the United Nations General Assembly. Lavrov highlighted his country's role in Afghanistan, Libya, and Syria. He said Moscow has been contributing to stabilizing the situation in Syria within the framework of the Astana process and has been working with all Libyan parties to implement political reforms. On Afghanistan's crisis, Lavrov stressed that Russia has been constructively engaged in the promotion of an Afghan resolution. He said recognizing the Taliban is not currently under consideration.
We don't have any information about anybody having turned to us for the accreditation. There is an ambassador working in Moscow who was appointed by the previous government, and the question of international recognition of the Taliban at the present juncture is not on the table. We will proceed from that premise if we receive a request for the appointment of a new ambassador.
The remarks come after the Taliban named a UN envoy setting up a showdown over Afghanistan's seat at the world body. Taliban Foreign Minister Amir Khan Mottari on Monday nominated the group's spokesman, Sohail Shaheen, as Afghanistan's UN ambassador. Ghulam Izakzai, the current UN ambassador who represents Afghanistan's ousted government, is also asked to renew his UN accreditation. That is, the Taliban seized power in Afghanistan last month.
And that's a wrap for now. Bye, everybody.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
Listeners special. In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. Salam, dear listeners, and warmest greetings to you, and welcome to this week's edition of Listeners Special. On this Sunday, September 26, 2021, I'm Atefa Erfani hosting this program today. As you may know, Listeners Special is the Sunday program where your views are presented through emails, letters, and messages. So please contact us and tell us what you think about our programs. If you have any messages for our dear listeners around the world, then record your voice, send it to us, and get your voice heard. Please do remember, Listeners Special is your program. It's your views that are important. And dear listeners, here I, on behalf of my colleagues in IRIB English Radio, do express my condolences on the event of Arba'in. As you may know, Arba'in is the 40th day after the martyrdom anniversary of Imam Hussein, peace upon him, the third Imam of Muslims, the third infallible heir of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. Arba'in is commemorated annually through a march by Muslims, Christians, and non-Muslims, which is the biggest in the world and known as Arba'in pilgrimage. From different countries, people come to Karbala and hold ceremonies in this Iraqi city. Again, I do express my condolences on this tragic event. Please do keep us company. And as usual, many of you have taken the trouble of sending us reception reports. As you may know, these reception reports are very important and useful for us in IRIB English Radio, especially to our technicians and engineers. These reception reports actually enable us to provide a better service to our dear listeners around the world. All of you who have sent in a reception report will be receiving a QSL card from us. Actually, these days, due to coronavirus pandemic, we are sending our dear listeners eQSL cards, yes. So please wait for an eQSL card from us. So here we have received some reception reports from our dear listeners around the world, which I do express my appreciations to them, including Rafon Ahmad from India, Kristen Ivanach from Italy, and Don Glaka from the US. Many thanks for sending us these reception reports. It shows your commitment to IRIB English Radio. And from around the world also, we have received so many letters and emails, which I mentioned some of their names here, and later during the program, I will read their emails or letters. From India, we have an email from Anand Mohan Bain. From Morocco, we have an email from Yusuf Ben Meir. From India again, we have an email from one of our regular listeners, from Jayanta Chakrabarty. From Ukraine, we have another email from one of our regular listeners, from Konstantin Provotorov. And the last but not the least is an email from Freddy Irigoyen. Yes, this email is from Uruguay. And thank you very much for sending us these emails and letters. And after a short break, I will be back with these kind messages. Please stay with us. Welcome back to your program, Listeners Special. And as I said, we have an email from Anand Mohan Bain from India. Anand Mohan says, "Hello. Today, while writing this letter, I feel so heartbroken that I'm not able to describe it. My wife, Fulmala Bain, who had been living with me for 46 years, left me and this world on September 2nd. Everyone has to go, but she left in such a way that on August 31st, she kept walking with me in Bilai Market, but left after a day. She had heart attack twice in the house, while another heart attack on the way to the hospital. The doctor said that the whole heart was blocked, while she never spoke such a thing. Never had chest pain, never had blood pressure. It is impossible to understand what is written in fate. When I look everywhere, I become sad. I request everyone to wish that her soul rest in peace. Hello, salam and warmest greetings to you, Anand Mohan Bain from India, and we're so sorry for this tragic loss of life. We're so shocked by hearing the news. Actually, I, on behalf of my colleagues in IRB English Radio, do express my condolences to you on this sad event. And the only thing we could do is asking God to bestow you and your children and your family members patience so that you could cope with the situation very well. It was so sad. Anyway, thank you very much for sharing your experience and sending this email to IRB English Radio. May her soul rest in peace. Yes. Thank you very much for letting us know about that. Write to us soon and tell us your views about IRB English Radio programs. Anand Mohan Bain from India. Oh, okay, what a pity. So, from Morocco, we have an email from Yusuf Ben Meir. Yes, Yusuf Ben Meir from Morocco says, "Dear IRB English Radio staff, greetings. Unfortunately, I prefer to receive a paper QSL card in general rather than electronic one. Thank you very much. The electronic card is the solution in these difficult times. We hope that things will improve as soon as possible. I hope you're all fine. Greetings to you from the Kingdom of Morocco. Stay safe." Salam and warmest greetings to you, Yusuf Ben Meir from Morocco. And many thanks for writing this email to IRB English Radio. Of course, everyone prefers to receive a paper QSL card from IRB English Radio because it stays and remains as a souvenir from a radio station. Anyway, we have to deal with the situation in the time of pandemic. And unfortunately, the only way we have is sending our dear listeners electronic cards, EQSL cards. And please accept it from us in the times of the pandemic. And we also hope that the situation regarding the coronavirus pandemics improves as soon as possible. And we wish you all the best, Yusuf Ben Meir from Morocco. Write to us soon and tell us your views about IRB English Radio programs. And now, dear listeners, after a short break, I will be back with an email from one of our regular listeners, Jayanta Chakrabarty. Welcome back. Here, as I said, we have an email from one of our regular listeners, from Jayanta Chakrabarty from India. Jayanta says, "Dear producer and all my friends at IRIB English Radio, I am pleased to send you a report of broadcasting on the shortwave. The reception quality was good with strong signal strength. I will be thankful if my report is verified with a printed QSL card and some postage stamps for collection when the postal services are normalized. God bless all at IRIB English Radio to remain safe and cheerful. With warm regards." Salam and warmest greetings to you, Jayanta Chakrabarty from India, one of our regular listeners. And thank you very much for writing to us in IRIB English Radio. So we are so glad that the reception quality was good with a strong signal strength. So my colleagues will soon send you EQSL cards, because in the time of pandemic we can't send you actually paper QSL cards and souvenirs and, as you said, postal stamps for collection and other souvenirs of IRB English Radio. Of course, as you said, after the postal services are normalized, we can send these souvenirs to you, dear listeners. And God bless you, Jayanta Chakrabarty from India. Thank you very much for sending us this email. Write to us soon and tell us which program or programs you like the best. Okay, from Ukraine, we have an email from one of our regular listeners, from Konstantin Provotorov. Konstantin Provotorov from Ukraine says, greetings from Ukraine. Dear IRIB English Radio staff, I have had a great pleasure in logging into your station, IRIB English Radio, and sending you my reception report, hoping that you will be in a position to verify it. Would you be kind enough to send me your QSL card or EQSL card? I have also enclosed audio files recording your broadcast. Thank you in advance for your reply. Yours sincerely. Salam and warmest greetings to you, Konstantin Provotorov from Ukraine, and I do express my gratitude to you for sending us this email. And it's also an honor for us to have you. So you logged into IRIB English Radio. Tell us which program or programs you listened to and you liked. Of course, we always embrace your ideas and views about our programs. Tell us which program or programs you like the best. My colleagues will soon send you an EQSL card. Thank you again for sending us this email, Konstantin Provotorov from Ukraine. And after a short break, I will be back with other emails. Please stay with us. Welcome back. As I said at the introduction of the program, we have received an email from Uruguay. This email is from Freddy Irigoyen. Freddy says, hello friends from the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran Broadcasting, IRIB English Radio. I hope you are doing very well in this global pandemic situation, and I'm pleased to be able to send you this report of reception of your radio tuned to 98.35 kilohertz shortwave frequency service in English. Although I live in Montevideo, Uruguay, I was able to listen to them with a receiver located in Cordoba, Argentina. I attached to this report an audio recorded so that you can verify it, and I detail some of the moments of the listening. I am grateful for the transmission made, and I hope to tune in again soon. Finally, I say goodbye and tell you that I would very much like to receive your QSL verification from the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran, IRIB English Radio. Salam and warmest greetings to you, Freddy Irigoyen from Uruguay. And we're so glad that the signals of IRIB English Radio are heard and received in your region. In Uruguay, that's great. We hope that you're doing very well, as you said, in this global pandemic situation. So my colleagues will soon send you an EQSL card, and of course we received the report and audio recorded that you sent to us. That's great. Thank you very much. In your upcoming emails or letters, please tell us your views about IRIB English Radio program or programs. Tell us which program or programs you like the best. Anyway, thank you. Thanks a lot for sending us this email from Uruguay, Freddy Irigoyen. Write to us soon. We are looking forward to hearing from you. And now time tells me we have to skip to the next section of this week's listeners special, which is, of course, this week's interview, which is conducted with one of our regular listeners. We hope you like it. Please take a listen.
Yeah, hello to our listeners of IRIB English, especially to the listeners of Listener Special this evening. Warm greetings from Central Philippines. My name is Henry Omadhai. I am a director and radio hobbyist since 1990. And presently, I'm a presenter of Philippine DX News every Sunday over Wavescan. I'm listening to various international radio stations from all over the world. In my collection, thousands of QSL guides, including from the Voice of Islamic Republic of Iran, RIB English. I think I've been listening to RIB English since 1995. I can hear current news from the Republic of Iran, pressing issues and current affairs. My favorite program, of course, is Listener Special. More than a decade ago, I can still remember you interviewed me twice in this program. And I think this is my fourth time here in your program. Yeah, to all the listeners around the world, during this pandemic, keep safe and continue to listen to RIB English service.
And dear listeners, before wrapping up this week's listeners special, I do express my condolences on Arba'in. As you know, Arba'in is the 40th day after the martyrdom anniversary of Imam Hussein, peace upon him. The third infallible heir of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. As you may know, Arba'in is commemorated annually through a march by Muslims, non-Muslims, Christians, different people, which is the biggest in the world and known as Arba'ina's pilgrimage. From different countries come to Karbala and hold ceremonies in the Iraqi city of Karbala. Again, I do express my condolences on this event. God bless you and goodbye.
Listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We'll be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send your emails to EnglishRadio@irib.ir. That is one word, EnglishRadio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at www.pasttoday.com/en. Our phone number is 00982122013720. Once again, our phone number is 00982122013720. Our profile is also in Facebook. Our address is www.facebook.com/pasttodayenglish. Thank you all.
the Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, the United Kingdom has been having a tough few years, and it doesn't seem to be getting any better. From the time that the Brexit vote was announced until today, London seems to be running like a train which has fallen off its tracks. Now, the waning empire now is having trouble supplying petrol to the people, as long lines have become the norm at many filling stations, and there are not enough truck drivers to supply them. And overall, energy costs are up by over 250%, and this is even before going into the colder months. Is the sun setting on the British Empire? Stay with us as we take a look at this on this Spotlight.
Britain is witnessing long queues outside fuel stations, including the capital London, following fuel rationing at some distribution centers and temporary closure of many retail stations. British Petroleum said it has closed more than 1,000 of its fuel distribution stations, citing a lack of both unleaded and diesel grades. The multinational gas and oil company blamed the closure on a shortage of truck drivers. The government has cautioned against panic buying, saying there is no shortage at refineries. Britons have, however, paid little heed to the pledge, as long queues of motorists have been forming outside filling stations since Saturday morning. Retailers have warned that the clock is ticking for the government and that it only had just days to prevent a significant disruption in festive preparations in the run-up to Christmas, which is only 3 months away. The administration of Prime Minister Boris Johnson says it is looking at temporary measures to address the issue. British media said the government is mulling allowing some 5,000 truckers into Britain on short-term work visas in a bid to alleviate the acute labor shortage. The UK's Road Haulage Association, however, says Britain needs 100,000 drivers to meet the demand. The UK opposition leader has blasted the government for what he called letting the people down amid the fuel crisis.
We're obviously at a crucial time for the country, and this government is letting people down so badly, whether it's hammering working people on tax and universal credit, whether it's shortages of food and fuel. I've just been up the road, three petrol stations, one of them with a massive queue and two of them with no fuel.
The driver shortage is partly blamed on Britain's withdrawal from the European Union, which has resulted in tens of thousands of truckers from EU member states leaving the UK. But it has been exacerbated by the coronavirus pandemic. The shortage has also set Britain on path for food chaos, since it has led to disruption in deliveries to supermarkets and fast food chains. The fuel issue comes as Britain is also facing a record high surge in natural gas prices, with wholesale prices being up to 250% since January. Experts say households will get hit by surging power bills this coming winter, while small energy firms are at risk of collapsing. Supermarkets and food firms say the price rise has caused a shortage of carbon dioxide, which is threatening UK supplies of meat and fresh produce.
I'd like to welcome my guest to this Spotlight, author and professor of international economics, Keith Pilby, out of London. And investigative journalist Tony Gosling, out of Bristol. Welcome both of you to the program. Let's start this off with Keith. Why does it seem that the country just has been in disarray for years now, but especially the last two or three?
Well, I think there's a number of things in play. First of all, there's an incompetent government. All right? There's no doubt that this is probably the most incompetent government that the country's ever had. They're there just because of their Brexit credentials, not because of any skills or competence in the jobs that they're doing. So that's a major problem. Secondly, of course, you've had COVID, which is contributing to the problems. I mean, it means that there's not enough drivers. The drivers haven't been getting their licenses and so forth. So there's no doubt that's part to blame. And then thirdly, of course, is Brexit is coming home to roost. I mean, people were warned, we need the imported foreign labour into the UK. We always have, and we always will, by the way, with the ageing population. And so, people have now left. They don't want to come back to Britain. The job's easier elsewhere. You can't be sure when you come in with your lorry into Britain that you can drive it, to Europe with the full load because of various bits of paperwork and bureaucracy. So people are avoiding us like the plague, in a way. And so it's a cocktail of things. And they've all come together. Some of these problems are temporary, of course. Some of them are genuinely temporary. I mean, if everyone tries to fill up their car with petrol at the same time, there's never going to be enough petrol. All right. But at the end of the day, there's a lot of underlying issues going on in the British economy. And I think it's all coming home to roost. And you put the three together and it's a very dangerous cocktail.
Well, Tony, your perspective, I mean, Keith talked about the incompetence of the political leadership right now. Would you say that that's the major problem? Or as he pointed out, dealing with Brexit or the pandemic, how do you evaluate the main problems and this lack, it seems, of organization and consistency that we're seeing?
Well, look, first of all, to say I'm not actually in Bristol today. By a marvellous stroke of serendipity, I happen to be in Peterborough, which is at the heart of the UK's national distribution network. And I've been driving around today past some of the biggest distribution hubs in the country. IKEA, which is a big furniture right around Europe, but it's very big in Britain. Their base, Amazon's base, and I see lorries streaming in and out of these non-essential places, including big furniture distribution hubs. There's no shortage of lorries around here. I've been sitting in traffic jams with 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 lorries right behind each other. And so this is where the lorries go out around the country. You know, the Americans call them trucks. We still in Britain, most of us anyway, call them lorries. Now, this story, I think, has been fascinating to watch unfold, the one particularly about the fuel shortages. Of course, they were very good, the BBC, on Thursday evening when these stories first broke. I was listening to the bulletins to say there is no real fuel shortage. It's just a shortage of drivers, and one or two fuel stations might not have enough fuel. Well, of course, that is guaranteed to do one thing, and that is to start panic buying the next day. And the other thing I saw was the increase overnight in the fuel prices at the petrol stations. Increases of between 5 and 10 pence a litre just that evening after the story broke. So this to me says one thing, and the reason I'll underline this is because I know for a fact, having seen particularly lots of these vehicles going around, the lorries going around and trucks in around Northamptonshire, is that the fuel companies are the most profitable in the world. If anyone can guarantee high pay and a guaranteed pay for their lorry drivers, truck drivers, then it's the BPs, the SOs of this world. They have no shortage of cash. Their profit margins are the highest in the whole of the Western world, as many shareholders who invested them will attest. And so the idea that they cannot afford to keep fully staffed their distribution networks, to me, is utter nonsense. And I was really appalled to see that the BBC, when they're reporting this story, don't comment on the fact that the oil corporations in the West anyway operate as a cartel. The idea that one is any separate to the other, they all work in concert. And of course, they are globalist, global corporations. They're all anti-Brexit. They're all Remainers, or as we still call people who still want to be part of the EU, Remainiacs, who still want to plough this furrow. So I'm absolutely convinced that this is a collusion, really, between the big oil companies and the big media, all based in London, to really just bamboozle the public into panic buying, effectively. So it's a very irresponsible type of journalism. And as we know, there is no real fuel shortage, but it creates a sense of panic to see people queuing up. And I think it's an absolutely appalling misuse of the broadcasting networks and the newspapers to try and panic people in this way. If there was a problem at a few fuel stations, then, people would hardly notice. But the idea that you're saying, you're going to have to fill your cars up tomorrow, and then making an extra load of money by putting the fuel up overnight, to me, it's a cynical abuse and misuse. And actually, of course, this is really about pay. It's not about a driver shortage. It's about people not being paid enough. And if these various distribution companies started to give decent wages to these lorry drivers, which is, that's exactly what people should be doing. If you've got a shortage, you start to pay your people more. It's a very antisocial job. You're spending many nights away from home. You have to sit in traffic jams, wait for roadworks to be finished for hours sometimes, crawling forwards. It's a horrible job to have to do. And so these people need to be paid properly, and then, okay, in which case the distribution networks will be back up and running tomorrow.
What do you think about that, Keith? That was interesting what Tony said, the globalists versing the basically the Brexit individuals. Your take on this? I mean, how much of this is created, and how much of this is real?
Well, a lot of it is real, I'm afraid. I mean, you may be in Peterborough watching it all distributed. That's true. There's going to be a lot of trucks there by the very nature. But the point is that there's not just fuel shortages. There's shortages on the shelves. People are queuing to get an appointment with their GP. I mean, the idea that there's not just these problems are just nothing to do with Brexit and the labour shortage in Britain is, you know, unbelievable. We may be Remainiacs. Many of us will turn into rejoiners, I think. And the point is that it's widespread throughout the economy. It's not doing well. Global Britain is failing to do trade deals with America, as promised. The Australians, it doesn't really matter. We do so little trade with them anyway. That's the reality. And so to deny that Brexit doesn't play a role in this is unbelievable. And of course, if you've got queues of people, you're going to raise your price. That's called capitalism. And the person that makes the most money out of fuel in Britain is, in fact, the government. So when you fill up with your litre of petrol, something like 75% actually goes to the government. 75%. So the idea that they're profiteering companies have got all this money, the BP share price has not done well over the years. So there's a number of inaccuracies from your previous correspondent, I'm afraid. And the labour market is tough in Britain at the moment. You know, finding the people with the skills and prepared to do these low-paid jobs. Of course, pay will go up. That's how a market economy works. And if there's a shortage of lorries, but it doesn't happen overnight. All right, the shortage is 100,000. So you don't train 100,000 people to drive these trucks overnight and bring it in the army.
Well,
like
let's stop right there. The shortages. Let me just jump in here, Keith, because the shortage you're saying is 100,000. I mean, couldn't this have been foreseen? It's not something that. It's just, you know, say a couple of hundred. I mean, that's a lot of people. It took it to get to this point for the government to realize that there's a crisis. I mean, how do you see it?
Well, the government's been warned about it for months, but it's been going on for months. Industry has been telling them pre-Brexit we needed a good deal. We needed certain occupations. We needed seasonal workers for the farmers because they're all planning less crops next year, not more, less, because they haven't got the workers to pick it. So the government has been ignoring all these calls because they're, you know, their beloved Brexit. Now we're seeing the costs, and eventually people will wake up and realise what a costly, wasteful and expensive exercise Brexit has been. And of course, what's the sad thing about this? It's not the rich that are going to suffer. The rich have got plenty of money to fall back on savings. Ultimately, right, it's the people that were brought on board by Boris and his cronies that voted for this, and they're going to be the poor people often that, you know, former Labour voters, and they've been sucked into the Conservative Brexit fanatical game, and now they're the people who are going to most suffer from it all.
Okay, well, Tony, what about that? I mean, it just seems that there was not a whole lot of calculation into the chain effect of decisions that were made.
Well, look, I'm old enough to remember the real fuel shortages we had in Britain back in 1973, where we had queuing outside petrol stations for months on end, where that was caused by the Yom Kippur War,
well,
the October War.
Sorry to jump in here. I'm not just talking about the petrol right now.
Yeah,
I'm just talking about in general.
What I'm saying is that was a real fuel shortage. Mm-hmm. This is not. And I go back to my initial point that these fuel companies can easily afford to pay properly drivers who will work for them. But they have chosen to use this as an excuse, really, to cause panic. Whilst Boris Johnson was away in the United States. So that's one of the reasons I think this has taken place.
So, Keith, overall, tell me, how do you see this affecting the British people? You just now, you alluded to, of course, as always, it's the poor people who suffer. But in general, how do you see it overall affecting the people? And how will it affect the electorate in general when going to the polls?
Well, it's going to take some time. I mean, if you look at the opinion polls, it's almost astonishing that Boris is still in the lead. If you look at opinion polls, I mean, but you can only keep giving people bad news for so long. And of course, there's going to be more bad news for a lot of people. The furlough scheme ends in September. That's been supportive of a lot of people. That ends. The universal benefit, £20 a week, is going to end, which is £80 a month for a lot of people. In London, there's about to impose a congestion charge, ULEZ zone, that's going to affect a lot of people with older cars than they generally poorer people. So there's a lot of bills, higher gas and electric bills coming, you know, not just starting in October. There's going to be a further rise in April. And inflation picking up and wage growth not keeping up with inflation. So, you know, there's a lot more bad news to come, I'm afraid. And that is going to take its toll eventually.
Tony, your thoughts. You were shaking your head a bit. Do you see brighter days ahead as Keith are actually seeing the opposite? Or tell me, why were you shaking your head?
Well, I mean, I think it's quite clear to me there's a war going on, basically, and that is between the globalists and people who should we call them Brexiteers, but, you know, nationalist Brits who have seen what's been going on with the European Union and are signalling to the rest of Europe that maybe they should think about getting out of the EU too, because this club in Brussels has proven to be effectively a kind of a Fourth Reich. In other words, it's run by big corporations for their own personal private benefit, and there's no real democracy involved at all. They've got a parliament of a whole bunch of people who can't actually make any laws. All they can do is try and slow down things by the people who are appointed to the top of the European Union. I think, yes, we are going to be under assault. It's quite obvious that's what's going to happen from those globalists. And these fuel companies, and, by the way, the BBC, are very much pro those globalist influences. In fact, they get paid. The BBC still get money from some of these globalist influences. I think we've got every bit of possibility of pulling through all this. And, you know, we have a fairly stiff upper lip, we like to say, and we will deal with these problems. But what doesn't help is when you've got the mass media actually fueling the fire. And the mass media have driven this panic buying. There is no shortage of fuel in Britain. There is actually no shortage of drivers to do fuel distribution, because these companies have the money to pay them.
I mean, Tony, what about, because as I said, we're just not talking about the petrol prices right now. As Keith had talked about earlier, just overall energy costs and their the stocks as far as in the stores are not being well stocked. I mean, overall, do you see that the cause of all of this is related to what? Is it just something that's created again because of the globalists, or how do you see it?
Well, that's a very good question. And I think what we're looking at now is main infrastructure in the country coming under attack from various angles. This isn't just accidental shortages. Of course, arterial distribution, for example, of food around the country is now very, very centralised. We've just had one of our major supermarkets, one of the big four in Britain, has been taken over by American hedge funds. And that old supermarket, Morrison's, they used to deal direct with farmers. In the future, all of the meat that comes to those supermarkets will be going through the main meat distributors in the country, not through direct from the farmers to the customers anymore. So there is an attempt to bring all of this national infrastructure, I would call it, like fuel, like food, all the other things too, and energy, into private hands. And in those private hands, those private companies can work together to squeeze the supply, to cause panic, and then they can make many, many more profits. And I think we should see these kinds of infrastructures brought back into national ownership so they could be run for the interests of the population rather than for the shareholders of those companies.
Keith, how do you see what Tony's assessment just now?
Well, I mean, We try to run a capitalist society, a mixed economy. We certainly don't want to nationalise everything, and private sector does many, many good things, OK? So that's nonsense. But
what is clear is that the only boom in Britain...
The only booming business in Britain at the moment is bureaucracy and filling in forms, the Northern Ireland Protocol. Every farmer will tell you exporting has been a nightmare. You can see it in the figures. The Brexiteers may deny it, but the figures are staggering, the fall in trade with the EU, and that similar trade has not been affected outside of the EU. So